Halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by three-time Stanley Cup champion, former New Jersey Devil and current New Jersey Devils analyst for MSG Plus, Ken Danico. Ken, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. How are you today?
We're doing really well. We were talking about your good friend Patty Elias last segment, and we're all in agreement that Mr. Elias should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I don't think you're going to disagree with that, right, Ken?
Well, from a teammate standpoint, from a friend, and certainly a guy that believes there's nobody as important or right up there, certainly with the Marty Brodeurs and the Stevens and guys like that as far as importance to organization, I would say yes. I know I look at the criteria, and sometimes you don't know. It's all about who's on the committee and what they're looking at. So if I'm going to be realistic, I'm going to say he's probably on the cusp. I'm not sure it will happen, but I certainly think for everything he's accomplished, and you have to put some credence in the fact that he played for one team, 1,240 games. He leads all categories as far as offensive numbers. And the fact that we won two Stanley Cups and was instrumental in those two Stanley Cup championships, you certainly have to give him consideration, don't you?
Ken, you mentioned the two Stanley Cups yourself. You won three Stanley Cups, two with Patrick Elias in 2000 and 2003. And I saw the interview that you did with Patrick Elias for NewJerseyDevils.com. And for anybody who hasn't seen it, they should definitely go check it out. It's excellent. And you mentioned the A-line with Jason Arnott and Peter Sikora. What made that line so special?
Well, you know, you always hear the word chemistry with the line, and they had it on and off the ice. They were close, and I think that, believe it or not, really helps them, helps any line come together. They hung out together off the ice. They talked about the game. They talked about situations and where they're going to be on the ice at all times. So I think all those things factor in, but you just had a nice combination. Patrick and Peter were very close countrymen, obviously, and they kind of adopted Jason Arnott as their big brother, big centerman, that kind of gave them the element of a guy with size, strength, who could shoot the puck. I mean, you got the creativity of a Patrick Elias and Peter Sikora, and it just seemed to gel. And like I said, I think for the most part, they really enjoyed playing together. They enjoyed the run they had as a line, and took it upon themselves, certainly in 2000, we won the Cup, of being the go-to guys, and we all know nobody scored a bigger goal than Jason Arnott in Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Finals against Dallas, and the pass came from none other than Patrick Elias. So they carried us that year. We had a well-balanced team, but those guys were certainly the go-to guys, and I think they just had a nice mix. Jason Arnott was that big, strong guy in the middle. And like I said, Sikora and Elias, great vision, great hockey minds, and those guys seem to create a lot of offense for us.
Ken, to transition to the modern Devils, what do you see in the Palmieri, Hall, and Zajac line that makes it a good option right now and something for the Devils fans to look forward to next season?
Yeah, you know, it really is a work in progress as far as the team. We know that, and they're in a rebuilding stage somewhat, and they're getting a look at a lot of young guys who continue to improve. But you always need that go-to line, and it took till, you know, maybe 15 games ago where they put Hall, Palmieri, and Travis Zajac together, and they really look like they could be a top line, a line that going into next season the Devils can count on, and hopefully they improve in other areas to surround these guys. But Travis Zajac, you know, he's a Manitoba native, and a lot of people say, well, he's not your typical number one, and certainly from maybe a skill set standpoint, that might be true. But show me a number one line that has three all-stars on it, and doesn't happen too often. It's about what they bring to the table. Travis Zajac is just an all-purpose guy. He's going to win you big draws. He's one of the better face-off men in the league. He is so smart defensively, so when there is a breakdown, he's a guy that will make sure You know, Hall and Palmieri are accounted for in their own zone as well. Not that they don't play good defense. Certainly Kyle is a guy that blocks shots. But I just think it's a nice line of speed. Palmieri can shoot. Taylor Hall, creativity. And Travis Ajak, so responsible in most areas of the game, a complete player. That it's something the Devils certainly can look forward to and understand that going into next year. They have a line that they can count on, and they seem to really found a groove. And I look no further when they played the New York Rangers. Elaine Vigneault had mentioned and said, no, they'd like to score more, certainly. I know from their standpoint and on a regular basis, they need some help, support. But it's not them that has to score every game. But Elaine Vigneault said, I don't know how they play against the other teams, but he said they were a handful, and that was the game the Devils won, and they haven't won too many lately when they beat the Rangers in overtime. And the Rangers are one of the better teams in the league, but they got a lot of compliments from a coach that has a pretty darn good hockey club. So they're very formidable, and the Devils are hoping to move forward with these guys and then fill in the right pieces and some of these young guys develop.
Ken, as a defenseman yourself, I'm curious, do the Devils miss Adam Larson this year?
Well, sure you miss Adam Larson. I mean, he was a real sound, solid defenseman, a guy that's very smart in his own end, uses his stick well. So you certainly miss him, but having said that, they needed an element like Taylor Hall, and I'm a guy, loved Adam Larson, and any Oiler fan that asked me, because I'm from Edmonton, I kept telling them when they were in an outrage that you're going to get a pretty darn good defenseman, a piece that you guys need, and certainly Taylor Hall was an aspect the Devils need, more offense and a guy that can create and has speed. And Taylor Hall's been terrific this year. I mean, you don't just look at numbers. The team hasn't scored much again, and they know that's where they got to improve. But the amount of points he leads the team, he has 51 points this season. It's probably like 70 on another team that creates a little more, and that's something they want to continue to get better at and improve. And I talked about that with the young guys, but he's been terrific for them. So I think it was one of those trades, win-win for both hockey clubs, and Adam has given the Oilers an element that they've needed. You got to trade somebody good to get a good player back, and it was one of those deals that, no, we didn't really want to get rid of Adam Larson, but that's what the Oilers asked. We wanted Taylor Hall, and it's a trade I'd make again, certainly, if I'm the Devils, but it's worked out pretty well for the Oilers, too.
We're joined by Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst on MSG+, three-time Stanley Cup champion. Ken, have you wished Scott Stevens a happy birthday today?
Yeah, I know. It's April 1st. He's always on April Fool's, and it's funny you brought that up because I was actually thinking about it. You know us guys, we don't get too sentimental about birthdays and things like that. I guess as you get older, you do a little bit more. So I'll probably give him a text today and what a great teammate and great friend. But normally, under normal circumstances, we don't tell anybody. We get softer in our old age, and any time it's some kind of birthday or anniversary or whatever it may be, we start wishing each other well and give our best. So I certainly will text him. I haven't yet, I will say. I know he's engaged and enraptured with his Minnesota Wild as an assistant coach, but certainly will give him a shout-out today.
Ken, getting back to Patrick Elias, when you look at the game coming up on Saturday, April 8th at Prudential Center between the Devils and Islanders, how emotional of a night is that going to be for Patrick Elias to go out there with the rest of the Devils and take his final lap with the team that he's played 21 years for?
Well, I tell you, Patrick is one of those guys that was very loyal and respected the logo on front and was one of those guys, you don't see it too often. We hear it all the time, especially in this day and age, of a guy staying on one team, and he did have other opportunities, and he did not want to leave or go anywhere else. He took pride in wearing that jersey, and obviously that's near and dear to my heart, having played for one organization and kind of having the same attitude along those lines. And you know, he's made no bones about it. His family's coming in, friends, and it's very important to him, I think, more for the fans and for him to have one last go around and warm up and just thank the fans and appreciate them for the support they've given him and his family over the years. And that's sincere from Patrick, because he's a guy that's well thought out. He's a smart, intelligent person, not only on the ice but off the ice. I think he's very content. That was, you know, everybody says, well, you go out with an injury, and, you know, he wanted to come back during the year, but he just felt, certainly just talking to him on the side and in the interview as well, the fact that, look, I wanted to play at a high level, and if I could not help the team at a high level, my knee wasn't quite up to par. He felt maybe he could have played the second half of the season and given it a whirl, and the Devils would have respected that. I think Ray Shearer did a real good job of giving him his time and space to make his own decision. He earned that as a longtime great New Jersey Devil, but he felt that he wasn't going to be able to give enough, and I respect that from an elite athlete, because we don't go through their minds of, it's very tough to retire and very tough to say, I just can't do it anymore at the level I'm accustomed to. And Patrick felt that way, but he's got no regrets. He's very content, very happy with the decision. And like I said, he made mention of the fact that it's going to be emotional. It's going to be very special for him, and he wants to make sure the fans understand exactly what they meant to him and the great runs he had with the Jersey Devils over the years.
Ken, you're talking about emotional and special moments, and you as a father got to experience that watching your son sing the national anthem at the hockey game. What did that mean to you?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. That's nice. Yeah, you know, like any parent, you want your kids to follow their passion and follow their dream. And I'm not sure where my son got his voice. He's also into the acting thing and everything else. He's done it, oh gosh, as early as I can remember, 3-4 years old. He was always kind of a character. And we found out he's got a decent voice. It's not an easy industry, as we know. He's in the right area, but that's what he wants to follow. He's a senior in high school. And, yeah, I was very nervous. I was more nervous than the Game 7, to tell you the truth, because we want the success of our kids. I thought it was a great experience for him on a big stage, and he was settling me down. I'll tell you a funny story. In the sound check, they always have it a couple hours before the game where, you know, you warm up, you practice, and he was sounding a little cracky at times, and I have one tone, Barra, that's baritone. So I know nothing about the singing industry or field, and he goes, Dad, relax, I'm trying to find my pitch. And I go, oh, okay. I was just a little nervous, because I hope it's a little smoother than that. And he didn't have a nerve in the world, and I respect that, and the fact that any young kid that can go up in front of 16,000 fans, and I thought maybe they'd have it in a midweek game against the Western Conference team where it's not quite as packed, the building, but they picked the New York Rangers. That wasn't our pick. And the building is packed with fans from both sides, and certainly very proud of him. And he's got some ability, some talent, so I'm happy to guide that. I took care less at the time when he was younger. He used to have that pressure of, you play hockey like your dad, from all the fans and everything. And he used to elbow me and tell me, Dad, tell him I play. And he played a little, but I'd always take him to the side and say, Shane, it doesn't matter too who's your father. He said, I love the passion you have, and you follow your dream. And I think that's all we can do as parents. But I certainly was very proud of him. I thought he did a real good job, probably better than I even expected.
Ken, the Islanders and the Devils met last night. The Islanders took that one 2-1, but they lost John Tavares in the process. I'm curious, is the playoff aspirations for the Islanders kind of go down with John Tavares, and does it kind of rely on whether or not he'll be healthy enough to return?
Yeah, they got a much-needed win last night, certainly. They've gone into that game losing 3 in a row, and it just seems teams around them don't seem to want to lose right now. Carolina Hurricanes making an incredible surge as well, along with Tampa and Toronto, and those teams that are already, Toronto and Boston, are already in, are going on a little run of their own, and they're going to need some help. So I think it was going to be a long shot regardless. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have John Tavares, and it looked pretty serious at the time, whether it's a hamstring, whatever it may be, something went awry on him or a pop, and hopefully for their sake, he's able to get back, and it's just more of a scare. But I don't know the diagnosis just yet, as you guys probably. But, yeah, if John Tavares isn't there, I would have, it is probably over for the Islanders. If it isn't already, just from the standpoint that you're going to see a couple of teams with 90-plus points in the Eastern Conference not make the playoffs, which is pretty incredible. It shows you how good this league is, and you'd think if you have 90 points, 90-plus points, you should make it. But that's a competitive balance in the league right now, and they maybe just made their run a little too late, and they went in that little three-game swoon at the end of the year here where Well, you just can't afford it when you're battling to leap over a couple of teams.
Well, Ken, we're definitely going to be looking forward to next Saturday in the game at the Prudential Center between the Devils and the Islanders, which will be Patrick Elias's final lap with the team. They're calling it hashtag Patty's last lap, and we really appreciate you coming on this morning talking about your former teammate who you won two Stanley Cups with.
My pleasure. Yeah, it's going to be special for all of us because he meant so much to the organization, and certainly proud of what Patty's accomplished over his career, and it means a lot when a guy's as loyal as him, and we're going to be going to have some fun next Saturday and watch Patty take the ice, and certainly he said he's going to be nervous. He says he doesn't even know he's going to be able to skate. So the way he's accustomed to anyway, guys, but pleasure being on.
Thanks again, Ken, and enjoy the game tonight between the Devils and Flyers.
Thank you, pal. Have a good one.
All right, you too. All right, let's head to break. We'll be back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
This is no April Fool's joke, guys. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Ezra Ginsberg filling in for Drew Mandel. I don't know where he is. I don't care. Pleased to be with Sean Assor to my right, Dave Manouk to my left. I'm sitting in the middle right now, which is a little bit different. Drew usually sits to the right where Huss usually sits.
We try and keep Drew as far away from us as possible.
Yeah. I like to sit in the middle, though. I just have comfort. You know, I'm eye to eye with Rory. And
you get to use your laptop.
We have a good communique.
When there's not coffee all over it.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a spill during that Josh Green interview. Dave spilt a little coffee on the keyboard.
Swatted Ezzy's coffee inadvertently.
Okay. It's still working.
A lot of coffee.
Shocking.
Yeah. This computer's been through a lot, though. And it keeps ticking, so we're going to be okay. Guys, I want to talk about Munsey just tweeted out the lines from today's game day skate. No real surprises. I guess the biggest surprise is that Tyler Myers was practicing in a regular jersey as opposed to a no-contact jersey, which he's been practicing in. Go over the lines first. And, you know, again, you know, there has been a lot of debate about Nick Patan's usage as of late. He's still on that fourth line with Chris Thorburn and Brandon Tanev. And then all the other forward lines, we don't need to go over those. No changes there. Ehler, Scheifele, and Wheeler are still together. Then you've got Little up there with Perreault, Laine, Kopp, Lowry, Armia. I've been calling that the AAA line. Everybody seems to think that's a horrible nickname for that line, but I'm going to stick with it. And then no changes, guys, with the D pairings. Josh Morrissey's with Jacob Trouba, Julian Melchiori with Dustin Byfuglien, and then you've got Mark Stewart with Nelson Nauje on that third pair. Probably the biggest news is that Connor Hellebuck's starting tonight. Are you guys surprised that Hellebuck's starting over Hutchinson?
No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, the reality is that if Maurice is thinking that Connor Hellebuck is a guy he has to keep happy for next season, then he knows he probably can't, you know, run with Michael Hutchinson. And the truth also is that, you know, as important as the wins are to the fans in the sense that those who are paying to watch the games, you know, want to watch something that's enjoyable and want to get wins, the fact is that you need Connor Hellebuck to have a good feeling knowing that, you know, he's going into the offseason as a guy who's in the Jets' long-term plans. So, I'm not that surprised that he would go with Connor Hellebuck tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you, Davey. I think when you look at these last four games, I think just it's all about development and moving forward and taking the necessary steps to improve yourselves. And I think, with Connor Hellebuck being the future goaltender of this organization, I think to get him into as many games as possible, especially against teams that are playing for something, like some of the opponents that we have up, or that the Jets have up against the next four nights or next four games possibly, are playing for standings and seedings in their respective conferences. So, yeah, I mean, give the guy as close to playoff game experience as he can get.
And when you're talking about the Ottawa Senators, Sean, you're talking about a team that was embarrassed 5-1 by the Minnesota Wild in their last game, and they've only won 3 of their last 10. And as you mentioned, the Toronto Maple Leafs, shockingly, are only 2 points behind the Ottawa Senators.
It's a big game.
And if the Senators aren't careful, they might, again, like we talked about during the first hour, you could actually see a situation where the Senators fall into that wild card spot. It would be the second wild card spot, of course, because the New York Rangers are in the first wild card spot, which is ridiculous itself with 98 points to be in the first wild card spot. But that's the way the NHL decided to change their playoff format, so we have to stick with it. But you're right. The Ottawa Senators are playing for a playoff spot. You're going to see the Nashville Predators later, the last game of the season. My question for you guys now is, with Tyler Myers now skating in a full contact regular defenseman jersey, is there any point in having Tyler Myers play one of these last four games? He's not going to play tonight, but I guess, would you want to see him play one of those last three games? Is there any point, considering the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs this year?
Yeah, I felt the same way about that. I felt about Brian Little last year when there was question as to whether Brian Little should come back. And I thought, well, why are you going to potentially rush a guy back, get him into one meaningless game just to, quote, get him? Like, if he was a younger player, maybe. But, I mean, these guys are veteran hockey players. And the truth is, there's no point in putting him into a circumstance that could potentially cause some sort of problem with the lower body. And so you're sitting there, you're thinking to yourself, well, why would you do that? As opposed to allowing him to have the summer to heal. He's going to take some time off once the season ends, you know, for the Jets, obviously, but not for him, because the season's been over for quite some time, and recover, you know, health-wise, and then go back into training mode and then start the preseason completely fresh. I don't think that there's a mental aspect. I could be wrong, but I don't think there's as big a mental aspect with a veteran player that there might be with potentially a younger player. So to me, for my money, I leave a guy like Tyler Myers out of the lineup. I just don't see the value in him playing one or two meaningless games.
Sean, should Tyler Myers play any games here in the last three games of the year, not including tonight, because we know he's not playing tonight?
I mean, if he gets the doctors okay and he can't suffer any more setbacks to his already setback season, I mean, why not? Some of the reporters that were in his scrum, I think, are saying that he would want to get in be good mentally after a tough year. However, they're saying that still lots of hurdles to take place before that could happen. So whether Tyler Myers thinks it's a good idea mentally to get back in, yes. Whether or not for the development of the team and some of the looks for some of the other players vying for jobs for next season, it's useful for the club. Well, that remains to be seen.
Another question I want to ask you guys before we head to break: of all of the players on the Winnipeg Jets, this could be forwards, defensemen, or goaltenders, who do you think has the most to prove in these last four games to the coach? What do they have to prove to the coach? Who has the most to prove to the coach, I should say?
That's a really good question. For me, it's going to be Connor Hellebuyck. Up and down season. I know he's a rookie. I know he's young, but there's been lots to make over his play as of late. And if he can show some of the bright spots that the organization believes are there still, and he has, and, you know, maybe just show it on a more consistent basis, I think it'd be great for his development in the offseason.
Who's it for you, Dave? Is it Nick Batan? Is it Brandon Tanev? Is it somebody else? Is it Hellebuyck?
Yeah, no, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with one of the forwards, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily one in particular. I think there's a grouping of players like the Marco Danos, mm-hmm. the Nick Batans, the Joel Armias, the Andrew Copps, that really have an opportunity to seize a position, but they have to take it. And so, you know, I mean, and again, we talk about Nick Batan's limited ice time and the situations, but he is playing power play, so there is opportunity for him to kind of excel in kind of a skilled role there. So to me, it's making the most of the opportunities you're given. And so, again, if it's only a 5 minutes, 7 minutes, whatever it is, but you do get that power play time, or for Joel Armia, the PK time, you have to do something to impress, kind of, to show that you can play consistently. Because the problem is, all these guys show flashes, but it's a matter of, you know, it's an 82-game season, and you can't afford to only play 41 games or 60 games. You have to be able to play, especially when you're a player that could be replaced. You know, the Marco Danos, the Nick Batans, the Joel Armias, those are the guys who, in my mind, have to really kind of step up their game in the last, you know, week here of the season.
And we got a Nick Batan bobblehead coming up next weekend for the Manitoba Moose. So, I mean, we got some, positive news there with, you know, and unfortunately, Nick Batan's playing for the Jets. Yeah. But another question for you guys here. With four games left in the season, no back-to-backs, how many starts are we expecting Connor Hellebuyck to get? Sean, you mentioned that Connor Hellebuyck has the most to prove to head coach Paul Maurice. Do you expect him to get all four of these starts?
I think three of four. I think we see him 75% of the games, including the final game of the season.
Dave, do you agree with that?
I'm thinking, but my thought would be he'd get at least three of the four. Yeah. I mean, again, if they split, if they go 2-2, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be shocked, mm-hmm. but if they go 3-1, I don't expect Michael, let's put it this way. I'm not expecting Michael Hutchinson to get the majority of the starts. So it's either going to be even, or it'll be Connor Hellebuyck getting the most, games for the Jets.
All right, guys, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by University of North Dakota men's head coach Brad Berry. We're going to talk to Brad about Tucker Poolman and a few other players that have recently signed NHL contracts. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Third hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Let's go back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by University of North Dakota men's hockey coach Brad Berry on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Good morning, Brad, and thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, anytime. It's good to be on your show.
Brad, it was a bit of a disappointing finish for the University of North Dakota, losing in overtime to Boston University. What was this year like following up last year's national championship?
Well, obviously two different years. A national championship year, we were very experienced in every position, had a lot of depth, and we only lost six games that year. So there wasn't a lot of adversity or a lot of bumps in the road, and saying going on to the national championship. This year, a little bit of a different year. You know, we had nine guys leave our program, some seniors, some guys leaving for the NHL. We had a few guys that are mainstays in the NHL, and we lost a little bit of experience that way. So, again, starting with our group this year, I loved our group. We had a little bit of adversity throughout the year, a little through inconsistency and players trying to find their way in their roles and us becoming a team. And I felt that the last month and a half, especially last month and a half, 2 months, we played the right way, and we were a tough team to play against. And, at the end of the year, I thought, you know, if we got to the Frozen Four, we'd have a chance to replicate what we did last year. But you know what? I'm proud of our guys, the way they grew as a team. And, we'll even be stronger next year, I firmly believe.
Brad, one player that you lost this year, and Jets fans were overjoyed to see sign with the team, is Tucker Poolman. So what can folks around these parts expect from the East Grand Forks native?
Well, you're going to see a hardworking guy that brings it every night. He's a big-body defenseman. You don't normally find big-body right-shot defensemen that can move the puck and add to the game offensively. He's very good defensively, can add to the play offensively. He's got a 200-foot two-way game, and he's a guy that's very humble and hardworking. He doesn't have an ego, and he'll fit into the Jets culture very well going forward. Obviously, he knows he has to earn everything that he gets, but that's what he's done along his whole career, because he was a player growing up through youth hockey that didn't get a lot of accolades and had to work for everything he's gotten, and he's that typical late bloomer that's having a little bit of success now.
Brad, I kind of want to ask you a very similar question, but I want to focus on the Colorado Avalanche with regards to Tyson Jost. What kind of player can they expect to be getting?
Well, again, he's a high-end, gifted player. He's not big in stature, but, you know, he plays bigger than his size. He's about 5'11", 6 feet, and he plays the game the right way, too. You know, he reminds me a lot of Jonathan Toews when he came through our program, and his play with the puck, he was good offensively, but his play away from the puck was impeccable, meaning that if he didn't have the puck, he wanted to get it back immediately. He just didn't wait to get the puck from another guy. He was on the track trying to get it back. And the other part of Tyson Jost is he's a leader. You know, he was a first-year player for us, but he led in his own right in building our team this year. And again, he made everybody else around us better. And again, that's a sign of a good player moving forward.
We're joined by University of North Dakota head coach Brad Berry, and should mention former Winnipeg Jets defenseman Brad Berry, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Brad, another player that graduated from the University of North Dakota and went on to play in the NHL is Brock Besser. How special was that for you to watch Brock score in his first NHL game?
Well, yeah, I wish you would have scored the night before when we were playing Boston University. but anyways, he came through our program. And what's special about Brock is, like, he was our leading scorer as a freshman in that national championship year 2 years ago. And he was the first guy after we won it that came up to me and said, hey, coach, I want to come back next year. I want to do this thing again. And, you know, that said a lot about him. I mean, he had opportunity, probably could leave after 1 year. He wanted to come back and said a lot about him. You know, he had some injury issues this year that kept him out of the lineup a little bit. And you know, he just kept persevering. But it's great to see. And, you know, he left us, you know, right after that Friday game and went to play in Minneapolis on Saturday. And it was nice to see him do what he does, and that score goals. And, you know, hopefully he'll have a lot more success at that level.
Brad, I know you're probably biased when I ask you this question, but, you know, is there a better program in college hockey right now than UND? I mean, you guys have, I think, now six straight seasons of the best attendance in college hockey. I mean, you have phenomenal fan support. What can you say about the UND program?
Well, here's first and foremost. And again, like, you know, I went through this program as a player, and I have had a special feeling there with all the different coaches and players I've had. And now I'm very humbled and blessed to be an opportunity to be in the position to coach here at North Dakota. But, you know, the one thing is, you know, there's a few things, but, you know, we have the Ralph Engelstad Arena and probably one of the best college hockey facilities, if not the best in all of North America. But as much as we have a lot of different things here going for us, the biggest thing is our culture and having the players come through our group here. And we get some really high-end players, obviously like the Bessers and the Joes and Poolmans. And then we get some guys that we recruit to walk on here. Like I'll go back to a young man named Stefan Patton, who lives up in St. Anne's right now. He came through our program as a walk-on and was our team captain that led us to a couple of Frozen Fours. So we build our team through the character side, but not just the skill side, but the character side. And when you see these young men leave your program, it gives you a pretty good feeling inside that you got to be a part of their lives.
Brad, I'm curious, are you surprised at what defenseman Troy Stetcher has been able to do with the Vancouver Canucks in his rookie season with the NHL?
You know what, I think sometimes you're a little bit surprised because, you know, that's the best league in the world, the NHL, and coming from college, you never know how that transcends. And but all I know is, you know, we had Troy Stetcher for 3 years here, and he did the things the right way on and off the ice for 3 years. And you know, going into his third year, he dominated our level, meaning that, you know, it was probably the right time for him to move on. He accomplished a lot of things here. And I got a lot of calls from a lot of NHL teams and said, yeah, I don't know if he can play at the NHL level. He's not big enough for a defenseman. And I just go back to every day seeing him on the ice in practice or a game. He'd go into a corner with a player that's way, way bigger than him, and he'd come out of the corner about 98% of the time with the puck. And that just showed the sure will and determination of Troy Stetcher. So, you know, when you ask me, are you surprised? Maybe just a little bit, but I'm not surprised because of his compete level and willpower.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by University of North Dakota head coach Brad Berry. Brad, I know this didn't involve you, but how disappointing was it to see that the University of North Dakota was cutting the women's hockey program?
Well, I was very disappointed. I mean, I didn't know all the ins and outs on the reasons why and different things. I know budgets are a big deal, but, you know, you're dealing with people's lives. The program has been in place for, I think, over 14 years, and they've had a number of Olympians and different players come through this program. And, you know, a lot of Canadian girls, too, coming through here that gave them opportunity. And it was a sad day. You know, we think of North Dakota as being a hockey school, you know, having men's and women's hockey here, and to see them go by the wayside, it's a pretty sad day.
Brad, is there any chance that the program can be saved, or is it done?
Well, I think as of now, I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes, if any. All I know is, you know, obviously Mark Chipman, the owner of the Jets, his daughter played for the program for 4 years here and had an incredible experience. And, you know, him and I were talking here a little bit too. But I don't know right now if there's anything imminent. But, again, like I said, it's a sad day here.
Brad, I want to pick your brain from a coach's perspective. Recently, Hockey Canada decided to make smaller ice surfaces mandatory for young kids getting into the game. I'm curious, what kind of benefits can that provide to the youngsters getting into the game of hockey?
I think it's tremendous. You know, when you really think about it and then peel the layers back, I think that's what it's all about, like playing in a smaller area. I know when we do drills in practice, and especially towards the end of practice, we design compete drills, whether they're 3-on-3 or 2-on-2 or 1-on-1 in a small area, meaning that, you know, you're going to have to protect the puck. You're going to have to know what to do with the puck. I think the worst thing in the world, especially with little kids, is putting them on a big rink and let one kid skate end-to-end. And you know, because there's different development levels of kids at that age. And I think if you can put them into a smaller area, teach them how to compete and teach them how to protect the puck and handle a puck. I think that's the biggest thing, and it makes sense to me.
Brad, last question for you here. Now that the season is over for the University of North Dakota, we've got the Frozen Four coming up. I believe it starts on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. What's the plan for you personally and the rest of the coaching staff? Do you go right into recruiting mode, or do you have a little bit of time off here before you get to start to think about next year?
You said time off. What's that? You know what? That's a great question. And again, I'm glad you asked it, because everybody says to me, oh, God, you know, season's over. You know, you're done opening up and closing the gate all the time. What do you guys do for the summer? And, I'm on the road recruiting right now. I'm watching junior games, and, you know, you lose really good players, and you gotta recoup that, and you gotta try to find really good players. And that seems to be nonstop 12 months a year. So that's part of it. The other part of it is, trying to build your group, you know, we implement a summer program here, and, having our guys take classes and working out and building your group through the summer. And, there's a lot of things that go into it. So, like I said, it's sad that our season ended, and it's going to kill me to watch the Frozen Four next weekend. But, you know, we're planning to get right back at it again. There's a hunger there that we didn't quite get to the last game of the year, which we always try to do, and we're going to try to do that next year, and we're going to work hard to do that starting now.
Well, Brad, we really appreciate you coming on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today, and congratulations on the players that you've had that have graduated to the NHL, like Tucker Poolman, Brock Besser, Tyson Jost, Troy Stetcher. And even though you guys didn't win the national championship this year, we won't be surprised if UND is back in the Frozen Four next year.
Well, I really appreciate it, fellas. And I gotta be open and honest with you. I'm a big Jets fan, obviously being an alum, but when Tucker Poolman signed there, it got me really excited that we, knowing that we got another North Dakota player going to your program up in the Jets. And, again, good luck to you guys.
Yeah, I think, Brad, the Jets fans echo your sentiments. A lot of fans were a little bit nervous that Tucker Poolman didn't sign immediately after UND's season ended. And now that he's signed a contract, fans can rest easy.
Yeah, well, you know what? Loyalty is a big thing here at North Dakota. And, you know, as much as it took some time, more stronger than ever wanting to sign with the Jets. It was just that he had some injury issues and different things like that. But loyal guy, loyal program, and we tell our guys to make sure that you stay with the team that drafted you.
All right, Brad, thank you very much again, and enjoy, I guess, whenever you do get some free time, but enjoy recruiting and the rest of the spring and summer.
Thanks, fellas. Have a great day.
All right, let's head to break, guys. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
We're back. The April Fool's edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg joined by Sean Assor and Dave Manouk in the studio. Drew Mandel is not here this week. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want customized, maybe it's a Josh Hosang jersey or Tucker Poolman, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. True story, I have a Tucker Poolman jersey. I might be the only person that has a University of North Dakota Tucker Poolman jersey.
It's a nice jersey.
And it maybe really maybe I shouldn't be admitting that live on air, because I know that we're not supposed to be fans. But
that's okay. It's not a Jets jersey. It's a UND jersey.
Right.
So that's and he wasn't signed by the Winnipeg Jets at that point.
Yeah.
So
you're a fan of academics.
Yes, that's true. I am a big fan of academics, university, learning.
Well, your dad was a professor.
Yes, he was. And hopefully he's listening, and hopefully I'm not disappointing him.
Well, we haven't done any math, so we're okay.
Great interview with Brad Berry there. We've had awesome. Brad Berry on the show every year, I think, for the last 5 years. And University of North Dakota obviously didn't get into the Frozen Four, as we talked about with Brad, but there's a lot of good years ahead there. It's one of the best programs, if not the best program in NCAA. Guys, I want to switch the focus now to the Hart Trophy race. And this year, arguably, is one of the better Hart Trophy races that we've seen in a long time, right? You've got Connor versus Sydney, and then you've got Sergei Bobrovsky in the conversation. I know the Lawman had an article up for TSN.ca talking about Sergei Bobrovsky and why he should win the Hart Trophy race this year. And then you could throw in Patrick Kane into the conversation. He's got three more points than Sidney Crosby right now. My question to you guys is, the way Connor McDavid has been playing lately, you guys saw that filthy goal that he scored shorthanded the other night.
That was insane.
He's pulled ahead now with 91 points. Kane is 4 points back. And we should mention also that Crosby has played six less games than Connor McDavid. But in your opinion, considering that the Edmonton Oilers have just clinched a playoff spot and Connor McDavid is absolutely on fuego, has he run away with this Hart Trophy race? Is it safe to say that Connor McDavid is your Hart Trophy winner if the season ends today?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if the season ends today, absolutely. If the season ends in a week, yeah, probably. I mean, what it comes down to, he's the most valuable player to his team. I think the Pens can tread water without Crosby. Whether or not the Blue Jackets can sustain their winning ways without Bobrovsky is a whole other story. But despite Leon Draisaitl having an unbelievable season, I really don't think the Oilers are nearly as contenders as they are without McDavid.
I forgot to mention this. Connor McDavid is currently on a 9-game point streak, Dave. 16 points in his last 10 games, including 5 goals. So pretty remarkable when you consider that he's only 19 years old and he missed half of last year. Is it safe to say that he is the Hart Trophy winner right now, Dave, or is it a little bit more closer than I'm making it out to be?
No, I think you're right, Ez. I think he's run away with it. I think the fact of the matter is that Sean hit it. It's the fact that you've got a player who's the most valuable to his team, right? And if you don't have Connor McDavid, are the Oilers clinching that playoff spot? I don't know that they are. I don't watch the Oilers as much as I do some other teams, but I would say you'd be hard-pressed, and I think Sean was right when he said that, you know, the Penguins could probably tread water. Now, I don't want to diminish what Sidney Crosby's been able to do. And when you look at him at a points per game, him, McDavid, and Crosby are actually at 1.18, so they're both the same. Brent Burns, again, another player who we were talking about in that conversation for quite some time. He's right now, if you look at the odds, he's kind of seen as the second choice behind Connor McDavid. Patrick Kane, again, it's amazing to me what Patrick Kane's been able to do, and nobody's talking about Patrick Kane. Mm-hmm. It really is interesting. I mean, obviously we brought him up today, but if you look at him, right, like you got Patrick Kane, who's now second in the league in scoring. Second. I mean, Patrick Kane, like nobody's talking about Patrick Kane, and he's second in the league in scoring.
Expect him to be there every year, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact that, like I said, like that there's probably not, you know, we may see a 100-point guy, maybe not, who knows. But, like, you're right, Ez. That's the whole point. You just take for granted what Patrick Kane does year in, year out. But it's amazing to me that he's literally second guy in scoring in the NHL, and there's almost no mention of him. But, again, if you're looking at a player who's the most valuable for their team, Chicago, without Patrick Kane, probably is maybe not doing as well as they are right now, but is treading water. Same with Pittsburgh. I just don't think that you could say the same about Edmonton without Connor McDavid. And Gary has a good point. I mean, if you don't have Bobrovsky in net, mm-hmm. I mean, Columbus has a good system, and that's important, but, you know, how are they doing as well without, you know, what about Bob?
And Dave, that's why I think this is the best Hart Trophy race we've seen in a very long time, maybe as long as 10 years. And you mentioned Brent Burns there, and you guys know how big of a fan I am of Brent Burns. 73 points, including 28 goals in 78 games. But Brent Burns doesn't have any points in his last couple games. And there was actually a stretch there in mid-March where he didn't have a point for 7 straight games. So Brent Burns has fallen off a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of ridiculous when you think about how many defensemen over the last 5 to 10 years who have scored 70-plus points, right? There aren't that many. And at one point, Brent Burns was on pace for 90 points. Mm-hmm. Now it looks like he's going to finish with, you know, around 80 points. We'll see. He's got 5 games left here. But Brent Burns has fallen off. So I agree with you, Dave. I think right now at this point in the season, with about a week to go, I think it's really between Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, and Sergei Bobrovsky. But you throw in Patrick Kane. You know, he had another couple points last night. You throw him in there. He's not that far behind Connor McDavid. Sean, do you factor in at all how many games Sidney Crosby has missed, as far as if he was healthy, he'd probably be closer to Connor McDavid at 91 points?
I mean, it's definitely worth considering, But when you look at what he's been able to do, he's played every game since missing those six. So if you look at just the body of work he's been able to amass over the time he's spent in the league this year, I don't think that those six games really deter from what he's been able to do. I mean, he's tied with McDavid for points per game. We were talking about that. And just he's just what he does for that Penguins team. He just, you tell me that when Crosby doesn't score goals like he scored last night, banking pucks off the back of goalies' heads from behind the goal line, that doesn't fire their team up to get going. And I mean, there's not much more we can say about Sidney Crosby. But yeah, I think that even with the six games missing, he's still on par with McDavid.
I'm going to confuse things even more, guys, and throw in two players who are a step below those players. What about Nikita Kucherov? 80 points in 68 games. You mentioned points per game. He's right there with Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby. Is that being talked about enough, the fact that Nikita Kucherov almost single-handedly has Tampa Bay still in this playoff race?
No, I mean, there's another player that, you know, because of the, he plays in a, quote, non-traditional market. He doesn't get the same sort of fanfare that the Crosbys, the McDavids, you know, like, and some of the other guys, like, you know, even Brett Burns in San Jose doesn't probably get the same sort of recognition he deserves. And we often talk about that when we have guys on from those markets, how these are players who are underappreciated outside of that realm. So, you know, and as I want to throw another guy in, what about Brad Marchand?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 83 points. The Bruins, where would the Bruins be without Brad Marchand right now? So, you know, he's at 38 goals right now.
Nikita Kucherov named the first star of the month for March.
Well, and that goes back. I hate to be a broken record here, but it goes back to what I was saying. And I'm not, you know, someone
who throws
out those, you know, this is the best Hart Trophy race in a long time without actually backing it up. You know, my predictions this year might have been horrible, but I really do believe that when you consider, look at Evgeny Malkin. Evgeny Malkin's got 72 points in 62 games, which is incredible. Again,
he's just a shade off that pace.
Again,
right?
1.16 points per game. Evgeny Malkin, I don't even think he makes the top five this year, right?
Right. Like, no, you're right.
And, you know, you talk about Sergei Bobrovsky. I absolutely think that he should be a finalist, but is Braden Holtby not in that conversation as well?
What about Devan Dubnyk? Now, I mean, you would probably want to eliminate his last 10 games, but I'm just saying that, you know, where would the Wild have been without his play in net earlier in the season?
Yeah, and I definitely would not want to be someone voting for these awards. Like, when you're talking about the Hart Trophy and the Calder Trophy, we haven't really even got into that much today. We got into it a little bit with Michael Tracos during the first hour, but, you know, Austin Matthews admittedly has been running away with it here. He's got one more goal than Patrick Laine, and Patrick Laine has been struggling a little bit. Patrick Laine, of course, missed those eight games earlier in the season, including one recently with the flu. But that race is also involving more than just a couple players, right? Mitch Marner's in that conversation. Zach Werenski is in that conversation. You could even throw in William Nylander, Matt Murray, Matthew Tkachuk.
No, like, I think actually, as close as the heart is, I think this is probably, I'd have to go back and look. I can't see a better Calder race in years.
No, I don't think you have, Dave. And when you have a player scoring 34, 35 goals in a season, and it's not even a certainty that he's going to finish even second, let alone first, right? Like, it's possible Patrick Laine finishes third in the voting.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was voting, I would put Austin Matthews probably one right now, and then Patrick Laine two. Jets fans are probably going to go nuts on Twitter right now. But, I mean, let's be honest here, guys. The last couple weeks, Austin Matthews has really elevated his game for this Toronto Maple Leafs team. Back in, you know, early March, the Leafs had lost five games in a row, and it looked like, you know, they were on the outside looking in for a playoff spot. But Austin Matthews, playing a very important position, number one center for this team, he has really excelled. So I think Austin Matthews, you got to give him the Calder Trophy right now. And as far as who's going to finish second and third, it's probably going to be Laine and Werenski. I think we'd all agree.
I don't know. Marner. I was going to say, Marner's been so important for that Toronto team. And to be honest with you, I don't know that he gets the credit he deserves for playing with Matthews and help and facilitate the things that Matthews does. If you watch them play, Marner is getting Matthews up. I mean, what is he at, 41 assists right now? He leads all the rookies in assists. I mean, you can't understate that. And it's funny because people always talk about, well, they're a rookie line. Well, you put together high-quality rookies. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, if they're that grade-A talent, then that's, again, they're expected to excel. So, I mean, and, you know, a guy we haven't even mentioned, Sebastian Aho. I mean, look what the Hurricanes are doing right now. Look at the run they're on. And I'm not saying it's single-handedly because of Sebastian Aho.
Isn't it a great year to be a hockey fan?
Oh, it's insane. Is. Like, you know, you cannot complain. Like, obviously, Jets fans are upset with the way the season has gone overall. But the individual game within the game and the races that they're seeing is absolutely phenomenal. And, again, the competition for those very few spots has made it really, really exciting down to the end.
Can you imagine if Patrick Laine does not finish top three in Calder Trophy voting? Jets fans are going to go ballistic.
We might. I think the city of Winnipeg would officially declare war on the city of Toronto at that point. But I don't see that happening because, I mean, regardless, you know, regardless of whether he's slowed down of late, you can't diminish the things he's done, the hat tricks he's put up, the flair to the game. And, you know, he's a young guy. He still has some growth in his game and some things he needs to learn to do. But there's no doubt the excitement that Patrick Laine can bring to an NHL hockey game.
I was just going to say, and regardless if Connor McDavid ends up winning it and Austin Matthews ends up winning it, which we expect at this point, and you're talking about the top two first overall picks in 2015-16, there have been amazing battles and amazing accomplishments by a long list of players that we've gone over this segment, including guys like Patrick Kane and Sidney Crosby, and throw in Brad Marchand and Nikita Kucherov, Brent Burns, Sergei Bobrovsky. It's an amazing race. And as we talked about, even if Patrick Laine doesn't end up winning the Calder Trophy, he's certainly been one of the most impressive rookies that we've seen in a long time.
Since returning? I'm just going to throw that. Like, I don't know. Since the Jets returned, have we witnessed a more exciting rookie season out of anyone? I'm trying to rack my brain around it. Can't think of
one. And the one thing about Laine that's
maybe
that's
Truba.
I
think it's probably Truba, and I mean, I guess Scheifele spent an extra couple years in junior, so maybe you don't count him because he wasn't in the league as early.
Scheifele's grown steadily, though. That's been the fun thing to watch with Scheifele. Every year, you know, he gets a little bigger, he gets a little better, but just coming out of the gate with the flash and flair and all the hype, I mean.
Well, and the one thing I'd say about Laine that's noteworthy is he has the highest shooting percentage of any of these players. Mm-hmm. So he isn't taking as many shots. He also spends the most time on ice. But, you know, a lot of the advanced stats guys were talking about Laine's shooting percentage and whether it was sustainable over the course of a season. And while it's come down, because I think it was like over 20% for a significant amount of time, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. He's still, you know, 17.4%. I mean, that's a very good number. I mean, Austin Matthews, 14.1%. William Nylander, 11.2%. Mitch Marner, 10.4%. So you've got a guy who's shooting significantly higher percentage than his contemporaries, and that's not an insignificant fact. So I think Patrick Laine is definitely, I mean, there's no question to me he's top two in voting. I mean, if you're not voting for Patrick Laine or Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or William Nylander or Matt Murray, or like, that's the problem. Like, it really, Ezzy, you said it best. There's sometimes you want to be able to have a vote. This is one instance where it's like, wow, you're thankful you don't.
I'm good.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, we're going to head to break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the U.S. women's national team. They reached a deal with USA Hockey. They played last night against Canada. They defeated Canada opening night of the World Women's Hockey Championship in Plymouth, Michigan. We're going to not only talk about the deal that they reached, but what kind of impact it's going to have on other sports and potentially what type of impact it's going to have with the amount of people that are going to be watching this year's Women's World Championships. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Save. Kessel, 2-on-1 with Decker. Amanda Kessel shoots. She scores! What a shot from Amanda Kessel, and the United States has a 3-2 lead.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Two segments to go here on this April Fool's edition of the show, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. The Jets and Senators, puck drop 6 o'clock Central. Hustler and Lawless will kick everything off at 3 o'clock p.m. live from Boston Pizza City Place. And then Rick Ralph will follow H&L with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show, the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. That'll happen at 5 o'clock. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Guys, I want to spend some time now talking about the agreement that was reached between the U.S. Women's National Team and USA Hockey. The Women's World Championships kicked off yesterday, the U.S. defeating Canada by a score of 2-0. Team USA defending Women's World Champions. What did you guys think of the deal that was reached? Was it fair? Did you like what was included? I know that the women's team is now going to receive an annual salary, and there are other concessions that were reached in that deal. We can go over them, but I guess more so, Dave, what type of impact do you think this is going to have on the women's game? Is this good for the women's game as a whole, maybe to get more eyes watching the Women's World Championships and then the Olympics coming up in 2018 in South Korea?
You know what? I don't know if it has that significant of an impact simply because this is specifically for the American women. So if, you know, it's not as far reaching as that is, but I think it was so important for that program because I think, you know, USA Hockey tried to do whatever they could to, you know, they tried to get scab players. They went like deep, right? Because, and that goes to show you, that's a testament to the unity of the women that they wouldn't play in as replacement players because they went, I think, like two or three levels down.
I think they went into the rec hockey.
Yeah, like basically,
Division,
yeah.
Three rec hockey leagues.
So like they really searched to try and have to gain that leverage. But the reality was, and you know, when we had the lawyer on for the women's, was that 2 weeks ago, the truth is that you kind of felt like it was already over even before it was over in terms of the negotiation simply because public opinion was so against USA Hockey. I mean, and it wasn't just from women or you know, people who are sympathetic to that, you know, women in sport. It was high level, I guess they would be men who are sympathetic to women in sport, but high level men who were throwing their names behind that. And it was, you know, whether it was NHL players, whether it was coaching staffs, whether it was whomever, whether it was just like folks like us, like, you know, like people who have a voice who are able to kind of add to the conversation. And I think it just got too big. And USA Hockey knew that they had already had a losing proposition. And again, they knew that they specifically were going to lose because in any negotiation, you obviously want to have leverage. And when you don't have the leverage to say, look, if you're not going to play in Plymouth, Michigan this week, then we're going to get replacement players. They don't have those replacement players. Those, the black eye that would be on USA Hockey to not have a home team, you know, in the tournament that you're putting on is going to look terrible for you.
And some guys, some details of the agreement that was struck between the U.S. women and Team USA. The women are now going to receive roughly, and this is in a report by Craig Custance, they're going to roughly receive $70,000 per player, and that's going to include performance bonuses. USA Hockey will allocate $950,000 by the final year to a compensation pool for the players that will be shared. And now there's increased stipends for players. It used to range from $750 for newer members to a cap of $2,000 per month. That's going to go up. For the first time, the USA Hockey will pay the women's team performance bonuses, $20,000 for a gold medal, $15,000 for a silver. There were also concessions made with insurance coverage. USA Hockey and the players will establish a committee to make recommendations on how the Federation can improve its marketing, scheduling, public relations efforts, and promotion of the women's game. And, you know, I'm not going to go through all of them here, but guys, this is a landmark agreement between USA Women's Hockey and USA Hockey. So I think, as Dave said, I think it would have been such a shame if the U.S. women's hockey team was not included at the Women's World Championship. Not only are they defending champions, but it just wouldn't have been as competitive a tournament, right, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, the women's game is usually Canada-USA for a championship, which always ends up being an incredible game. And it's just not that enjoyable to watch if one team just dominates the other team through and through all the way for a championship. I mean, now at least there's some parity in the championships and It's great to see, because listen, when it comes down to it, these women weren't asking to be treated like superstars. They weren't asking to be having celebrity status. They just wanted to be treated equally. They wanted the same benefits that the men's team was getting. They wanted to be treated and funded the same proper way, receive the same compensation, the same incentives. And now that that's here, they can focus on being the best possible athletes that they can be to represent their country and not have to worry about a second or third job or providing for their family while training. You know, it comes down to equality, and it's great to see that this was resolved and that the women got what they deserve.
We're going to be seeing more of this tournament, I think, now with the focus on USA women's hockey and their struggle with USA hockey. Is this going to make you guys watch this tournament more, or are you going to maybe tune in once it gets to the gold medal game?
I definitely watched last night. Just to see a Canada versus U.S. is always a great, great time to watch. But I wanted to see kind of how the women's U.S. team took to the ice and kind of their spirit and their mentality hitting the ice. And they looked unified. They looked ready to go. They looked fired up. Canada obviously losing that game. But it was really interesting to see. They looked like a really unified team, and they looked really excited to be back on the ice representing the U.S. hockey.
Is maybe the biggest hurdle that women's hockey faces right now, we've seen the creation of the Women's Professional Hockey League, but maybe is the biggest hurdle that they have to overcome is that really fans don't pay attention necessarily to women's hockey until it gets to around the Olympics and the Women's World Championships, as opposed to following this sport on a weekly, daily basis.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, unfortunately, losing a program like UND mm-hmm. for the women is a big blow, because the problem is, like, that's a program that can churn out players. You know, Bradbury touched on it. That's a facility like no other. And it works for both the men and the women. So I think that, unfortunately, for women's hockey in the United States, that's a significant blow to development. And hopefully that, you know, some sort of last minute thing will come in and maybe save the program. But, you know, it's interesting. I think that the creation of the league, will it create more buzz? Will it create more interest? And, you know, I mean, I don't know that it's reached out here into the prairies so much. Like, I don't know that folks are necessarily paying significant attention to it, but that's also because, if you think about it, we're a fairly saturated hockey market with NHL, AHL. Folks like to pay attention to what's going on with the Wee Kings in the WHL. So it's hard to add kind of another level to that. But having said that, I'm sure there's lots of young girls who start and eventually become young women who look to that sort of opportunity and say, okay, well, I can go into a program like, or formerly like UND, but another one of the college programs in the United States, and then ultimately have that opportunity to continue their careers.
And there's been some great female players from Manitoba. Jocelyn the Rock comes to mind. There's also, you know, for those who haven't watched women's hockey in the city or province, the University of Manitoba women's hockey team has been good for very many years. John Rempel is the head coach of that team, and you've got, you know, women playing high school hockey and community center hockey. So there's certainly, you know, if you haven't seen any of that hockey here in Manitoba, go out and, you know, it's not happening right now. The University of Manitoba season is over. But when the season is going on, definitely go check out the U of M Bison's female hockey team, because they're very competitive year after year. Guys, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a very special guest. We're going to talk WrestleMania 33. Have some fun with this on April Fools. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Kurt Angle's theme music there. We've got WrestleMania 33 coming up.
Hall of Famer Kurt Angle as of last night, Ezzy.
That's right, Hall of Famer Kurt Angle. You might remember him with all of those Olympic gold medals around his neck. We are pleased, you just heard his voice, we are pleased to be joined in studio right now by the one and only Hustlerama, of course, host of Hustler and Lawless. You hear that weekday, every day. On this station, well, Monday to Friday, 3 to 6. Huss, We're going to go over some – we're going to do a – this is what we're going to do right now. We're going to do a WrestleMania 33 preview right now. We're going to go over some of the big matches, and then I want to hear – we're going to go Sean and Huss. Dave has tapped out. Yeah, Dave has decided to tap this one out here.
Special guest referee.
First of all, speaking of special guests, I would just like to thank you. I believe, and maybe there's been the odd cat call at the end of IC when we've been coming in to do a show, but I do believe this is my first official appearance on A Legal Curve.
Wow.
And it is only appropriate that it is on a segment to do with fake sports and sports and entertainment. And
on April Fools.
I appreciate great show, by the way, as always.
By the way, Huss, I do think we've had you on the show before, like in the early years. And then we would ask to have you or Gary on, and then you guys would just say, you know, stop calling me.
And Gary would say no, and I'd be like, yeah, for sure, I'm down.
Yeah,
I guess it's been smaller. But anyways, I'm very excited about this. You know, it's been a tough year for many of us hockey fans around Winnipeg, and thank God for Vince McMahon of the WWE to get us through.
Huss is actually an April Fool's joke. We've been off the air for the last 10 minutes.
Okay, guys, let's go through some matches here quickly. We've got about 10 minutes. Rory, if you think of any background music that we could have, maybe we can get a little music to set the tone here. We're going to go through some of the lesser-known matches first, and then we're going to lead up to the main event, which, of course, is the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg in the Universal Championship match. It's the rematch, by the way. Goldberg won the original match. What was that at SummerSlam?
Goldberg has abused Brock Lesnar twice. First, he beat him in like 90 seconds and then eliminated him quickly in the Royal Rumble. Much
it was
the
Royal Rumble.
Myself and everybody else. And it is payback time for Brock Lesnar.
Okay, guys, let's first start off with the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. I believe there are 30 guys in this match, including the Big Show, basically the modern day Andre the Giant.
The funniest thing about the Andre the Giant Battle Royal is, like, as of now, I think we know like 5 people that are in it. It's just they're putting in everyone that doesn't make the card. Just show up. You're probably going to get thrown over the top rope in the Battle Royal. But really, it comes down to a couple guys. The Big Show, as you mentioned, who is in unbelievable shape.
He lost like, what, 200 pounds?
He has abs.
Crazy.
And Shaq, by the way, it was supposed to be Big Show versus Shaq at WrestleMania.
There we go, Rory.
Shaq,
the music here.
Unable to get in shape to do, to pay the price to be able to face the Big Show. So he's out, and it's going to come down to the Big Show. But probably, I think the heavy favorite is Braun Strowman.
Yes. Okay, let's next go into, we were just talking about the U.S. Women's National Team and the agreement that they reached with USA Hockey. Let's go into the Women's Championship match. Alexa Bliss versus all available women.
Yeah, this is the SmackDown, by the way, because there is the Raw Women's Championship as a four-way match. Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Nia Jax. That one will probably have higher top billing. I'm a huge Alexa Bliss fan. She is the truth. They're going to throw everyone at her. But if you want a nice little underdog bet for this event, think of Naomi. She won.
Like my fiance?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe she's one of all available
takers.
Yeah,
all available. All covers. She's back.
No, Naomi won it. Won the championship a little while ago. Was hurt while doing it. Had to give the belt back. She is from Orlando. Hometown girl in this battle. You know how they like to send the fans home happy or give them a big pop for the hometown person. I like Naomi. And if you see Naomi's moves, she baby got back. She does. She has her moves. I can't remember. It's called the thump, I believe. But highly entertaining, highly athletic. It's one of those two.
I can't listen to you talk about Naomi and not think about my fiance Naomi. So it's very difficult for me. Sean, who do you have winning that match?
Sorry, which match are we talking about? Alexa Bliss versus all available women.
All available women.
Yeah, well,
you can't take the field, by the way.
Well, I can't take the field.
Sean loves all available women. So why wouldn't he pick all available women?
I'm taking all available women.
Okay, guys, next let's get into a match featuring two Canucks. The United States champion. You have Kevin Owens, the current champion.
No. Y2J is the champion.
Okay, sorry. I apologize. I thought Kevin Owens was the champion.
He was the WWE champ, and the reason why they're fighting is because Jericho signed him up for a match against Goldberg, who promptly beat him quickly, took the belt, and now he's fighting Brock Lesnar, and Kevin Owens is angry.
And Owens is on the list.
Oh, he's definitely on the list. Well, I mean, they were best friends for so long. And then Kevin Owens turned on Chris Jericho during the Festival of Friendship.
Shades of Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels in the Brutus the Barber Beefcake Barbershop. Okay, Huss, who do you have winning that match, Jericho or Owens?
Well, I would love to say Jericho because, of course, being from Winnipeg, he is one of our greatest exports ever from this city. Winnie the Pooh with Y2J, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. Jonathan Taves, I guess, would be on that list. But I actually think KO will win. I have a feeling Y2J, he's had a really long run right now. He's got so many things outside of the business. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes on tour with Fozzy or does another TV show for a while. But I think KO will be the winner.
Okay, guys, let's move on. We only have enough time here to go over about three more matches. The Undertaker, also known as the former undefeated at WrestleMania Undertaker. He lost to Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar, the one in 21-1.
That was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. Who do you have winning that one, Shawnee?
Go Undertaker. Kind of redeem himself at WrestleMania.
All right.
I'm taking Reigns.
No.
I think this might be the Undertaker's last match. Roman Reigns has been pushed as a good guy for a long time. Everyone seems to hate him. I don't know why.
Yeah, why is that?
You know what? It's just sort of weird, smarky, really hardcore wrestling fans. Didn't spend enough time in the indies. Something dumb like that. Anyways, I have a feeling that they're going to actually just make the run and he'll do some very dastardly things to The Undertaker and win, creating him as a legit bad guy and the end of the dead man. He will rest in peace.
WWE Championship match. You've got Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt's the current champion, right?
Yes, he is. They were together. They had a big falling out. Randy Orton burned his house down, which you can imagine would get the heat going for the match. Wyatt's an interesting character. He's had a big push. He's had some big matches before. I'm not sure whether he really catches on with the fans as much. Randy Orton's a longtime favorite. Not a favorite of mine. This is one of the matches I'm probably not as into as the other ones, but I do think Randy Orton will win. But I would have loved to have had AJ Styles fighting for the belt, but we'll get to him in a second going against Shane O'Mac.
Sean, who do you got in that one?
I got Randy Orton also.
The Viper.
Yep.
Shane McMahon versus AJ Styles. See, I don't follow wrestling as much as I used to. Why are those guys even... Why is Shane McMahon even fighting?
Well, a couple weeks ago, AJ Styles waited for Shane. He was angry that he did not yet have a proper match at WrestleMania. Attacked the general manager, the SmackDown commissioner, when he came in. Threw his head through a window of a limousine, which coincidentally had a GoPro mounted inside the car. What were the chances
of
that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
So anyways, there's a lot of heat on that, and AJ Styles is going to get revenge, I guess, on the system that's holding him down. And the only real suspense in this, I think AJ Styles will probably win this match, is what idiotic, ridiculous, death-defying stunt Shane McMahon does.
Yeah.
They're not in the Hell in the Cell. There's no big cage. However, there is a roller coaster built on the set. So, I don't know, maybe Shane McMahon's last act as an active performer will be jumping off the top of the roller coaster through something and then never to be heard from again.
Because he has jumped off of the top of the steel cage recently.
Many things.
He bought The Undertaker last year off the Hell in the Cell. Nearly killed himself. I mean, listen, if you don't know what we're talking about, just do a little YouTube on Shane McMahon jumping off ridiculous objects and... you will see it. But he's in incredible shape, though. I mean, he's pushing 50 years old.
Vince is still in good shape.
Vince is the legend.
Vince will always be in good shape.
72 years old, ripped, could probably take out half the roster right now if he wanted.
Okay, guys, let's get to the most important match at WrestleMania 33. You've got Bill Goldberg versus the Beast Incarnate Brock Lesnar, who earlier this season attended a Winnipeg Jets game. So we know that Brock Lesnar is a Winnipeg Jets fan. So that's how we connect this all to hockey, because it's not just the Illegal Curve wrestling show here, guys. Who wins this? Goldberg is the current Universal Champion. Does Brock Lesnar steal his belt, or does Goldberg hang on to it?
Well, all in on Brock Lesnar.
Really?
He has been humiliated by Goldberg once, losing it was like a minute and a half at Survivor Series, I believe it was. And then tossed out of the ring quickly by Goldberg at the end of the Royal Rumble. So I don't see any way Lesnar does not have a major, major redemption. gets the belt back. And listen, it was pretty hard to believe that Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar in the first place. Never mind, did it twice. So, yeah, the Beast will feast.
Quickly, Sean, who do we... jackhammer?
Who do you got, Sean, winning that match?
I'm going to take... Yeah, Huss made some good points. Third time's not the charm. I'm going with Lesnar.
Okay, really quickly, Huss, you got H&L coming up at 3 o'clock live from Boston Pizza City Place. What do you guys have going for the show today?
Well, I guess we'll probably have to talk about the Jet Sens a little bit. I could talk about this for another 2 hours. But, yeah, no, we'll be getting ready, of course, for the Jets and Sens. Talk to our folks on the Jets beat from the Winnipeg Free Press, as well as guests from Ottawa. And probably get into a little bit of the action last night from, obviously, the World Women's Hockey Championship that you guys talked about. And be a lot of hockey. And maybe we'll even slide in a little baseball with opening day tomorrow. How good is tomorrow? Opening day for baseball.
And it's going to be awesome.
It's
the ultimate
best.
Thrill ride.
Yeah,
WrestleMania Huss, 33.
Big thanks for coming on today, Huss. We had some fun. We don't usually talk about wrestling, but when you've got WrestleMania coming up tomorrow, we had to talk about it. So big thanks to you, Huss, for coming on. Big thanks to all of our guests today. Michael Trakos, Brad Berry. We had Dean Brown on as well. We had Ken Danico. And thanks to all of our sponsors for coming on. For supporting us, I should say.
Tune into Facebook Live right now. Ezzy's going to be put through a table in less than 5 minutes.
I love it. All right, guys, until next Saturday, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. H&L coming up at 3, Winnipeg Jets versus the Ottawa Senators at 6.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.